Coming up next on This Week in Computer Hardware, the perfect $35 PC. The trouble with Ultrabooks that Intel knows what's good for you. Used notebooks, tough times for AMD and NVIDIA, next-gen Xbox graphics, picking an X79 motherboard, and 120 hertz displays. It's all coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 154, recorded January 26th, 2012. The perfect $35 PC.
This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All stream directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit.
Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware. I'm Patrick Norton, joined, as always, by Mr. Ryan Shrout, who is safe at home, or at least in his home office, or his office that is his second home. How are you doing, man?
It's kind of my primary home, I'm not going to lie. I assuredly spend more hours here than I do there, especially in recent weeks. But yeah, I'm doing good. A lot of rain here, but it's not snow, so it could be worse.
It could be worse. I'd like to apologize to everyone in the audience for not being available last Thursday, but I didn't actually manage to do anything. My wife, who is pregnant and about to have a baby in 3.5 months, managed to pop one of her short ribs loose, which meant emergency attendance on my part. So I swear I was not leaving for fun. I was leaving for a family emergency. And props
Roger
to Roger.
Roger did a great job. Yeah, he did a great job filling in. He knows his stuff. So
he loves his hardware.
Whenever one of us can't make it.
Yay. We should probably start up with a common theme for this winter's series of Twitch shows, which is, oh, look at that. More Intel. In this case, Intel knows what's good for you, which is up on the front page of PCPer.com. And I'm looking at the graphic at the top of the page, and I'm seeing thin is flimsy, thins is ins, but is it best? And this is an interesting subject to get into. Because as somebody who's been carrying ultra light notebooks, ultra portable notebooks for 15 years. One of the things you run into as they start to really push the boundaries of how thin they can make a particular platform, if they cannot build enough structural rigidity into the area around the screen has a funny habit of cracking when you've opened and closed the notebooks enough. But it's interesting. Matt Smith is talking about how excited he is the HP Envy 14, the Dell XPS 13, both of which we're looking forward to get hands on to Texilla, the Samsung Series 5, the Samsung Series 9. And quote, these are laptops, at least at first glance, seem to have sincerely closed the design gap between Windows computers and Apple's MacBooks. And just as importantly, there are computers that are almost as easy to tote around as a tablet. The XPS 13 in particular stands out, I agree, as it's not much larger in width and depth than most current 11.6-inch laptops. That is a fantastic piece of engineering from Dell, the XPS 13. Really solid design feel. Reminds me kind of the glory days of the Dell Latitudes. And then Matt goes on and says, yet there are also reasons to dislike the Ultrabook. Let us not forget that Intel isn't a company that has much experience in developing consumer-oriented products. And then we get to thin is flimsy. So
it was an interesting kind of editorial he posed to me. This was kind of right after CES, and he said, hey, I want to write this editorial about my thoughts on Ultrabooks. And I said, oh, yeah, sure, absolutely, go ahead. Not really knowing what angle he would come at for it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, after reading it and editing it before we published it, I knew it was going to be kind of a, people were either going to really like this article, they're really going to hate this article. His premise is not that he doesn't like Ultrabooks. He doesn't think that it's an interesting or a good idea. But he kind of slams Intel a little bit for pushing it on the market as opposed to letting the market come to it. He thinks it's kind of odd that Intel essentially stole the design ideas of one of its own customers, Apple, and is not forcing, but let's say pushing all of its other customers to do very similar things. And there are a lot of drawbacks to it that he mentions. You know, he talks about He talks about the possibility of having like flimsy displays and flimsy construction. Not all of them will have that, but in order to meet certain price points that Intel wants these guys to hit, you know, are they going to build with the best components? You know, if the MacBook Air is still an expensive machine, are they going to build with the best components to get the same stability of hardware that they are there? He talks about, you know, losing out on connections and that kind of thing too.
I really got to say, I'm not sure stealing is the word I'd use to describe Ultrabook versus MacBook Air, because the notebooks in this form factor have been trickling out for years and years and years, mostly from Japanese hardware manufacturers who have really pushed the super svelte, you know, sure, can we make a notebook the size of a legal pad, not a 14-inch legal pad, an 11-inch legal pad. The MacBook Air is certainly by far, by leaps and bounds, the most successful effort in that direction. I don't know. No. It's interesting. You know, I guess part of what I'm thinking is Matt's more irritated, not just by the pushing the thin, but the minimizing the number of ports on the Ultrabooks and, you know, quote, performance penalty forcing change. Looking at the kind of benchmarks between a Dell Inspiron 14Z, the Asus U336S, the Acer Aspire S3, and that you're looking at, I'm going to generously say about a 20 to 25% drop in whetstone and drystone gigaflops. And
there's some interesting kind of points in it. So it's not that Ultrabooks are bad. He kind of posits that the push of Ultrabook by Intel so strongly and so dramatically might be bad for consumers because, you know, he talks about some of the statistics in the article. The majority of laptops are now people's only machines. It's your only computer. It's not a secondary machine like it is for you and me. Even if it's your primary machine, it's not your only machine. And so having things like only one USB port or only two USB ports becomes more of a problem when it's your only machine and you have things like a printer and an external backup drive and a mouse, you know, and those types of things. And he also talks about, you know, the keyboards maybe are not up to the capability that, or the quality that you can get in a 15-inch machine. He talks about the displays because these companies are trying to meet price levels that Intel wants to hit, and they're trying to get to this thickness level that Intel wants them to hit. That they're using lower quality displays, lower resolution displays, and lower just visual quality displays compared to some of their larger, thicker laptops. So for the average consumer, for the consumer that's just looking to buy a machine, does this actually present a better solution? For you and for me, I think it makes more sense. The other interesting statistic he said is, and this is true thinking about a lot of the people that I know here, the majority of laptops never leave the house. So
not me.
Yeah, right. You and I are different, but the majority of laptops, my friends, my sister, my mom, they have laptops, but they never leave the house. So do they need to be thin? Do they need to be super light? What is the benefit of that? Who travels a lot like you and I?
Well, I don't know. It's interesting because I think Intel probably did a fair amount of market research going into this. You know, high tech is actually a phenomenal place to get a job if you're an anthropologist or a sociologist from a tier one school. Because not only do you get a job, but you get a pretty decent job, and you get to study kind of contemporary behavior. But you know, in my case, it's funny. For years and years, I've had people, you know, classic case is my uncle, big guy, 6'4", you know, not a tiny guy driving big, healthy cars. And, you know, he was buying a Dell notebook several years ago. And I'm like, get the smaller screen, get the 14-inch screen, you know, get the one that weighs a pound less. He's like, I'm not going to notice a pound. And sure enough, 2 months later, he's like, God damn, that thing is heavy. And I'm like, well, I know. I've been carrying them, you know, my entire adult life. Lighter is better. I think, not to argue with Matt, but I think there's going to be some spectacular successes. I think the XPS 13, if they don't completely screw it up, is going to do amazing. The NV 14 looks pretty solid. I think it's going to be really interesting to see. You know, Asus looks like they've really gotten on top of things. Samsung has been doing good things in notebooks. I think if the vendors, engineers kind of live up to the spec, I think we're going to end up with some really happy people, because I think, you know, I carry my notebook. My wife, same thing. My wife uses her notebook in every room in the house. I use my notebook in every room of the house. My notebook goes travels with me. It goes from my home to the office. And I think there are more people doing that than you might realize. You know, would I like two more USB ports? No, I just put a USB hub on my desktop. the truth is most
think,
of the time,
I think the people that you and I know maybe are a little bit different than the average consumer across the entire country. I didn't really think about it before, but when he said that, you know, the average laptop stays at home and never really leaves. Not never, but it very rarely leaves the house. And I thought, actually, that makes a lot of sense. You know,
where did that statistic come from?
I don't know. It's in there. he links to where it comes from, but I sat down and I thought about it. I was like, yeah, okay. I'm thinking of my two best friends. They have laptops, but yeah, they never leave the house. My mom's never leaves the house. My sister's never leaves the house. They use it. They move it around the house. They might take it someplace every once in a while, but they're not really traveling much with it. Yeah. So it's a really interesting discussion. I encourage everybody to go read the editorial, leave your comments, feedback for him. I mean, he kind of knew he might be on the outside looking in this type of discussion. Like he says in the thing, it's not he has something against Ultrabooks. He likes the idea of the Ultrabook, but he doesn't necessarily think that it should be pushed as heavily by Intel as it is. We didn't really think back to CES. Did you see any laptops that weren't Ultrabooks?
A few, but I also spend a lot of time in dark corners looking at laptops. But certainly by far the number one, the absolute utter total. I mean, this is like, you know, the Centrino platform back before they turned it into, in the last year. It's Intel's done stuff like this before, just never so much with form factor as it traditionally it would be like Centrino was about. We want an Intel processor, an Intel chipset, and what Centrino is really all about, pushing Intel Wi-Fi adapters. And if you put all those three in your computer, then, you know, Intel would help you out with special deals or lots and lots of advertising money, and you would get to tie into the huge amounts of Centrino advertising that was being done. And it was just a marketing campaign that pushed Intel parts. In this case, I think Matt's definitely right, where it's like, boy, you know, some of your vendors might not be ready to deal with the engineering challenges of creating something this thin. And it's an interesting thought. I'm really curious to see how a lot of these notebooks hold up long term, because, you know, you got a clunky 15-inch laptop that's an inch and a half, you know, thick. You got a lot of room in there. There's a lot of Z that gives you space, you know, to absorb shock and to create thicker plastic, which isn't that expensive. So I think it'll be curious to see how these hold up and what consumers think about them in a couple of years. You know, it's interesting to watch, like, the first thing, you know, one of the first things Intel talked about at CES this year is like, hey, well, not one of the first things, but one of the things they emphasize is half of the Ultrabooks coming out this year are going to be 14 or 15-inch monitors, because all of their surveys said a lot of people are like, they don't want the 13-inch screen. They want a big screen. They want a big boy screen, not a little boy screen. So, or a big girl screen, not a little girl screen. I think Matt definitely makes some points. I think it'll be really curious to see how they impact the marketplace, and if like next year we start seeing gigantic tank notebooks, because everybody's afraid that their little notebooks are going to fall apart. Yeah, well, you know, the Panasonic Toughbooks. Let's talk about those another day. I have a complicated relationship to the Toughbook. Intel is thinking even bigger and likely leveraging their McAfee assets. QLogic, InfiniBand, purchased by Intel for $125 million, which gives Intel access to, quote, networking technology significantly faster than Ethernet. And I love the whole idea of a switched fabric technology that allows multiple switches to connect to multiple hosts or data stores, as opposed to the more point-to-point single broadcast which current Ethernet-based networks use. So InfiniBand, let me make sure I've got this straight in my head. InfiniBand is a networking technology, not a bus, question mark. Or can it function as both?
It is a external connection for now. But the idea is that Intel may be taking this IP and eventually building it inside systems. I don't know if we're talking about actually building it into a CPU to CPU bus, but they're specifically talking about building exaflop level supercomputers using this networking technology. So this allowed them to connect as many processors as they can fit into an area and essentially have them communicate at near, hopefully, the idea is to at near bus speed. So they're looking at this graph here.
It's funny. InfiniBand's fastest implementation is currently capable of 25 gigabits per lane. compared to the 1 gigabit per second per lane that PCI Express 3.0 drops. This could be like the world's fastest blade machine. Like blade machines start looking like they're connecting over a wow.
Right.
Actually, that's really cool.
Yeah, so the if you look at the picture on the website there, like you see all the connections between all these nodes of computers, and that's actually what you'll see today in supercomputers around the world that are using existing InfiniBand technologies to connect their computing nodes. And there's an interesting comment at the register that says they ponder what it could mean for companies which have used InfiniBand technology in their products, like Cisco and AMD, and whether or not Intel will now keep all future versions of that technology in-house, and affect kind of the other server markets to themselves, keep the other server market guys out of it. So such is life when you're dealing with a company that makes as much money as they do, I guess, right?
They're almost making Apple money.
Yeah.
That's sorry, that was the too. Other big story this week. Yeah, like Apple made as much profit in this last quarter as they made in entire sales the year before, which means basically actually the thing that actually applies to the Twitch audience is Apple purchased more semiconductors in 2011 than HP or Samsung by about $750 million, $750 million. Gartner was writing about that yesterday. Apple is now the largest single consumer of processors in the world, slightly ahead of Samsung and HP, both of whom are about $6 billion a year ahead of Dell, who's somewhere around $9 billion and change, which is still a lot of processors. And then the AMD Radeon HD 7970 watch continues. 3 gigabyte cards were in stock earlier today.
They're still in stock. They're still cool. In stock, actually. Surprisingly. So we posted this up yesterday, and we've kind of been on watch, right? Let's see how many of these actually stay in stock. And actually, we can check now live as we record this on Thursday night. Of the three that I had linked yesterday, they are still in stock.
So either the channel is fully filled and AMD is producing excellent volumes of the chip, or nobody's buying them. I tend to think the former. I would prefer it to be that AMD is having no yield issues with the 7970, and that's why they're in the channel.
I think there's no doubt that there are I don't want to say yield issues, but there are let's say bandwidth issues at the fab, right? Because they're TSMC is the only one doing 28 nanometer. As far as I know, there's still only one line for that. So they're definitely balancing a lot of things. After the cards were released, actually while we were at CES on January 9th, they were in stock for a matter of a day or so, and then have been out of stock essentially until this week. A couple here and there. But if you go to like Newegg, who's obviously the biggest reseller of these components. Right. I think there are six or seven different ones in stock now, including an overclocked model. They range from $609 a piece to $559. and that's $559 is $10 over the MSRP for the card. So they're not super gouging you. I don't feel like they're really taking advantage of the stock situation there. So there are cards available. Now, if you want the fastest single GPU graphics card on the market, you can get it as long as you have the money to do so. And hey, you can buy two or three of them and go crossfire or three-way crossfire if you want, if you're really feeling froggy.
This is like the poster in the hot rod shop. Speed costs money. How fast do you want to go?
They will get you wherever you need to go. You just have to open your wallet wide enough.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, it's good to see them available. It's I tend to believe that they are selling them, maybe not at the clip that they were selling them on January 9th. So we'll see. We'll obviously keep an eye on it as the weeks go by. There will be other 7900 series products that are released fairly soon. So we'll see how that inventory is kind of affected by everything. So, obviously at this point, we're going to see cards that are going to come out at lower price points from AMD Southern Islands chip. So, We'll see how it goes. And with all the rumors we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks about NVIDIA bringing that stuff, their schedule in, we'll see how that affects 28 nanometer production as a whole as well.
There you have it.
Speaking of GPU production, there was the Xbox rumors that came out this week that the rumored next Xbox or Xbox 720 or whatever.
Xbox 720.
I can't really imagine them actually calling it that. Can you? It seems kind of
stupid.
Know. Yeah.
Obvious.
It's not
weird.
Yeah. I don't think it'll
happen.
Shouldn't
it be like the I think I'm with you on that one, but calling it the Xbox 720 seems to be convenient. Apparently, Fudzilla and Semi-Accurate initially reported this. IGN picked it up. And sources have confirmed that mass production of the system's GPU will indeed begin by the end of 2012, but will not be based on AMD's 7000 series Southern Islands GPU. Instead, the processor for the next generation Xbox will be derived from the 6000 series, which was introduced last year. Essentially a 6670, which is going to support DX11, multi-display output, 3D, 1080p HD. The chip currently has a market price of upwards of $79.99, which seems kind of low-end, right? Because you're like, oh, it's a sub-$100 GPU. That's going to suck for 3D performance. Until you remember, kids, that it's currently running a how-many-year-old CPU in the current generation Xbox? Robert Herron, one of my co-hosts on Techzilla, is actually really excited about the next generation Xbox because it's going to offer such a huge graphics performance. You know, the IGN's math puts the 720's raw graphics processing power at six times out of the Xbox 360 and, quote, 20% greater performance than Nintendo's forthcoming console, the Wii U. I should probably call that Nintendo's unfortunately named console, the Wii U. Dev kits apparently in August and shipping in November, October.
That's 2013. Been my theory for a while. They'll kind of announce it at E3 this year. They'll show software E3 next year and ship that holiday. Right. So I'm still not really sure 100% one way or the other if these rumors really kind of jive with what I thought was going to happen. So if there's two possibilities, they're still going to use an IBM processor, so they're going to have a discrete GPU. The 6670 GPU sold for $89 when it was launched in, I think, mid-2010. I want to say that's right. So it's an older part, right? And it's six times faster than the current Xbox. But this is indeed, I still think that PC gamers have another pride point here. When you're thinking about a part that was released for under $100 18 months ago or so, a year ago or so, is going to power this gaming console. And I play console games, so I'm not extremely biased one way or the other. But if you look at the computing power you get, we just talked about like the 7970, right? The computing power between a 7970 that has 2048 shaders in it and the 6670 that has, I believe, 280 shaders in it. You're talking about an order of magnitude of potential performance difference. So, you know, obviously you get what you pay for type of thing. But it's not as dramatic a jump, I guess, as I had kind of hoped or expected for for this next generation console, because I expect this next generation console to last just as long as the current generation Xbox did.
It was
the longest console generation we've ever had. And you know, when the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 were announced, they were actually using really modern GPUs. I think actually they were even ahead of the performance of the best desktop parts at the time when it was announced, not when it actually shipped, but when it was announced. And that's not going to be the case here.
Well, I mean, I think it's going to be interesting. One, you know, this is over a year out from release. At least 6 months out from initial developer boxes. They could, you know, they're rumors, albeit substantiated rumors. I think it'll be curious. One, I mean, something we've been saying is like, you know, 1080p is not really a big challenge, you know, for GPUs. So, man, I'm curious. I'm curious if they're thinking about starting to do more regular updates of the Xbox platform, which makes no sense to me, or if they just have the wrong part number, or if this is the part number they're going to use for the developer boxes while they see where things settle down for the final version. I think it's going to be interesting to see. I think it's going to be interesting to see what it actually ships with, when it ships. I think it's going to be interesting to kind of be there at E3 and see what exactly they have in mind for the platform. But It'll be one to watch. The Wii U will be one to watch. Jeez, the Wii finally gets HD. About time. should we just say AMD lost money in Q4 2011 and sold 30 million APUs? And then go on to NVIDIA and AMD blaming hard drive shortages for poor GPU sales? I think that is worth noting.
Also worth noting, Intel made a lot of money.
Yeah.
Like a lot of money. Not as much as Apple, but a record year, record quarter, all this in 2011 when a lot of people thought we were going to be in kind of a downturn era of hardware sales. So they're obviously doing very well. The only kind of flatline product was netbooks, go figure. And they're still hoping to make yet more money next year when they go after Qualcomm and the type of tablet cell phone markets. So, yeah, that's enough on the financial stuff.
Have you loaded the Catalyst preview drivers? I'm actually loading them as we speak. Actually, no, I'm going to stop loading them as we speak because
this computer's
cause Skype eat its own tail.
So the new Catalyst drivers are out. They add the 12.2 preview drivers add some interesting features. Actually, where is this at? They add some new Eyefinity technology. They add dynamic configuration changes, switching between different display configurations when plugging or unplugging displays, which is kind of nice. Windows taskbar can now be moved and resized based on user's preference, which is good. So you can have your taskbar on your center screen as opposed to on your leftmost screen or if you have a multi-display configuration. And then profile manager improvements, you can easily switch between 5x1 configuration, 3x2 configuration, whatever it is you're going to do, you can change a lot of things there. So that's good. They've also released the full version of 12.1, and 12.2 is just a preview driver. I kind of ranted a little bit on the PC Perspective podcast last night about the state of AMD drivers and how it wasn't very good, just because there are so many versions kind of floating around at all the same time, and it's very confusing for a user to know which version they're supposed to be using. So like even here, they're like, use 12.1 if you're looking for performance improvements, but if you want feature improvements, look for 12.2 and then apply this Catalyst application profile that will update your Crossfire settings and capabilities up to the 12.1 level. And then if you're running a 7900 card, don't use either of these drivers. You need to use 11.12 RC11, which is this link. Oops, we accidentally gave you the wrong link the first time. Here's the real link, but the file name is the same, so you don't know if you downloaded the right file or not the first time. There's a lot of that has happened in the last couple of months that I feel like they need to be called out on and fixed because, for me, I do it every day. It's not a big deal. But for I think the average, even gamer, downloading a 200 meg driver installation file, going through that whole process, kind of wondering if this driver is going to break my games, crash my system, right? You've always got those kind of things going in the back of your head anytime you're changing drivers on your system, regardless of what the component is. And they're kind of, they're putting users in this constant loop of updates that maybe reviewers and me like myself are used to, but the average person is not used to and probably shouldn't have to be used to. So,
yeah, you don't want to be sitting there going like, WTF, which one? Oh, screw it. And then not having, you know what I mean? Because there's almost always valid and wonderful performance and other benefits when you upload your drivers. But yeah, choosing between three sets of drivers for two different sets of potential benefits to the end user, plus an alternative version and leaking to the wrong page.
They've actually done that twice in like the last 3 months is that they've posted a new driver and then accidentally said, oh, that was a previous version of that driver downloaded again. At both times, it was the same file name that you were re-downloading. And I was like, why don't you just add another number to it? That way we know, this is not what I downloaded an hour and a half ago. It was just weird stuff like that. So, but they're out there. It's kind of like, you're kind of split. I want them to keep putting out updates. I want new things. Enthusiasts want the ability to tweak and perfect the system. But on the other hand, it's just if you're going to say you're going to put out one a month, put out one a month and make it a good one.
There you have it. Sorry, I just lost my tab.
What's that?
Raspberry Pi Linux computer. I thought this was kind of an interesting review. I like me some small some small computers. And it's interesting. If you've never played around with them, there's they're kind of a step above embedded systems. In this case, it's the Raspberry Pi. And it's based on I want to read this closely or else I'll screw up the number. The Broadcom BCM2835 chipset, which includes an ARM 11 CPU and a dual core video core 4 graphics card co-processor, connections for HDMI, component output, USB ports. The higher end or the higher tier $35 model will further feature an Ethernet jack and twice the RAM, 512 megabytes. These are actually really cool.
Raspberry Pi. This company's kind of been like the darling of the tech world, I feel like, for the past couple of months.
Right.
Just by offering these incredibly tiny motherboard form factors that you can buy and you can just build something on it, right? So you can install Linux OS, you can install Android, you can do whatever, tons of different stuff with this. And because of its size, there's just so many things that people will come up with to do with it, especially $35. $35, yeah. You know, I'd order 3 or 4 of them.
$35 with networking.
Just to have the backups type of thing.
Yeah, $35 with networking, like $25 without, I think. I'm on RaspberryPi.com. And unfortunately, all they have available now are the keyboard stickers. And those are on pre-orders.
Sold out of everything.
It's like, what do you mean I can't order one now?
So the video that they're showing now is the coders behind XBMC, the Open Source Media Center software, demonstrated that the XBMC software running on Raspberry Pi, playing back 1080p Blu-ray movie, smooth frame rates, thanks to the Broadcom GPU, and capable of 1080p 30 frames per second H.264 hardware accelerated decoding.
I really want to build a set-top box with one of these.
You know, it's funny because like we're rebuilding an office and a studio and this kind of stuff. And this is like, this is the type of thing that you use double-sided tape on and stick to the back of every monitor that you have. And it's like, well, okay, if we can get a wireless adapter on there in some way, we can just have every laptop or every screen connected to a network. And boom, ready to go. At $35 a piece, that's a no-brainer, right? That's way cheaper than even buying one of those Zotac, media boxes that's $400-$300 that kind of Visa mount on the back and that kind of stuff too. And this, the double-sided tape, if it breaks and it falls off, I've got more of those for $35. So yeah.
All they have to do is work. Well, they're in production right now, so I'm actually going to see if I can get signed up on the mailing list. Actually, I probably should have done that before we talked about it on the show. Silverstone! Not nearly as tiny, another home theater PC enclosure. This is actually pretty interesting. 17.3 inches wide, 5.9 inches high, 13.4 inches deep. So it's not going to stack. It's not going to be the same size as like a Blu-ray player or a traditional kind of VCR AV receiver size. But it will take a full-size ATX PSU of up to 6 inches in length, 5 internal drives, and a CPU cooler of up to 120 millimeters if, this is a big if, you leave out the optical drive, up to 5 expansion cards in the case, 4 of those slots able to accept a card up to 11 inches in length. The only real fault that Benchmark Reviews found was the lack of IR support and a bundled remote control. BenchmarkReviews.com did the review of the new Silverstone case. This has a lot of potential. For a home theater PC, especially if you're ripping disks to central storage in your house and don't need an optical drive in the box, which is something Robert Herron is the king of, and I am trying to slowly catch up with him on. I got to be honest with you, I'm not particularly irked by lack of IR support because there's so many interesting ways to control home theater PCs right now. And Windows home theater remotes are dirt cheap and pretty easy to set up, but it is an interesting case. X79 motherboard roundup. Is there a clear winner in the X79 world?
I think there are not enough.
What a sigh that was.
It's funny because like, I have experience with quite a few of them, with several of them at the very least, but they're all very similar. And unless you're going to go with something that's that's way out in left field, like the Asus Rampage 4 Extreme, that has first of all, it has a really high price, like $450, but it's got so much out there. Like it has a dongle that connects to your graphics card with a USB port, that it, like, it's a pass through for your monitor that actually has a hardware overlay for monitoring and overclocking your system. Things like that that are really kind of over the top. When you start getting down into your $220 X79 boards, they all have very similar features. You have to start looking at things like, what layout do you want? Do you want to have, do you need support for 3 graphics cards? Do you need support for 4 graphics cards? That's right. Pretty crazy. And then, you know, I for me, I would look at how many USB 3 points are there, 3 ports are there integrated on the system, you know, that type of thing. And it's pretty easy to keep an eye out there. So TechSpot did a roundup of quite a few of them, 5 of them, looking at, what were their lists here? They have the Asus P9X79 Pro, the Intel DX79SI. Looks like they had the Asus X79 Sabertooth and the MSI GD65 board. So they had 5 different boards. It's actually... I'm trying to see there. The very last page, they say picking the best one. And yeah. Oh, they have an ASRock board in there too. So they said that the ASRock X79 delivered the best high-end, reasonably priced X79 motherboard. That's kind of the main caveat with X79 platforms right now. Mm-hmm. Is even with the release of the 3820 CPU in the coming weeks, the cheapest motherboard you could buy is still like $225. And that's like the least expensive option, period. And even this ASRock board they're talking about is $345. And if that's kind of their reasonable one, that bothers me. The P9X79 Deluxe is $380. MSI's is about $300. Intel's is $280. So, I mean, they're all high-quality solutions, and I really think Asus is known to have just outrageous numbers of features on there, but even ECS and ASRock are catching up on that. So I just boxed up quite a few X79 boards to send out to our motherboard guy to go over and send a review. So we'll have individual reviews of actually a couple of these exact models very soon. So
there you have it.
We of course always want your viewer questions. Twitch@twit.tv is the email address, or you can hit us on Twitter @PatrickNorton or @RyanShrout. Right now, though, before we get to a big old and kind of fascinating stack of viewer questions, we want to take a moment to thank our sponsors at Netflix.
That's right. Of course, everybody knows Netflix. Hopefully, if this is not your first episode of This Week in Computer Hardware, if it is, welcome. If it's not, enjoy hearing about Netflix again. You guys should definitely be signed up for the service if you aren't already. This is the easy way to stream thousands of TV episodes and movies directly to you, wherever you're at, on almost any device that you're on, saving you time, money, and hassle. You don't have to worry about going to a video store. You don't have to go to the grocery store to drop anything off in any particularly colored box. So you can watch it on all kinds of devices. You got your Mac, your PC, your iPad, your iPhone, your Android phone. If you have a gaming console, all 3 of the current gaming consoles, the Xbox 360, the PlayStation 3, and the Nintendo Wii all support Netflix streaming. If you don't have any of those devices, it's time to introduce you to something like a Roku box or a Netflix box, or an Apple TV. Or you might want to check the user manual for your DVD player, your Blu-ray player, or your TV, because you may already have support for Netflix streaming on devices you already own. One of the cool features of Netflix is you can watch those TV shows and movies instantly. You don't have to worry about waiting for it. You don't have to queue anything up other than going to the website and picking which movies you actually want to watch and TV shows. You can begin watching them in one place on one device and finish it in a completely different place on a completely different device. So if you're watching it on your Blu-ray player at home at night, you go to sleep, you want to finish that movie, or you want to watch the next episode of that TV series on your commute to work, you can watch it on your phone, on the bus or on the train. As long as you have the streaming service, you can watch as many TV shows as many times as you want, as many movies or TV shows as often as you want and as many times as you want, which is great, of course, if you have kids that like to watch cartoons over and over again.
Yes, it is.
That is always a plus. So whichever way you choose to access Netflix, you can watch as many movies anytime you want, and you can cancel at any time. That's important. We always know people like to have that security. You can cancel anytime. You're not signing a long-term subscription. And the reason they can do that is because they're confident that you're going to like their service. You're confident that you're going to find use for it and find that nominal monthly fee very reasonable. But even better, you can try it for 30 days completely free on us. All you have to do is go to netflix.com/twit and be sure to use that URL when you sign up for your free trial. netflix.com/twit. You get 30 days completely free. Try out the service. You can still watch as many movies and TV shows as you want in that 30-day trial period. And we do thank Netflix for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware, and we hope you enjoy watching instantly with Netflix wherever you happen to be. So thank you, Netflix.
Thank you. Curtis has a question about FirePro and MDT card options. He writes in, "Hey guys, I've been listening to your show for at least a year now and I've learned a lot." Thank you, Curtis. That's what we love to hear. "I plan on upgrading my computer case and graphics card now. I plan on moving the components from my current rig to my new case. I know the feeling. And then after that, down the road, I plan on upgrading the motherboard, RAM, and power supply. You have sold me on the Antec P280 case. Here are my questions. What do you think would be a better GPU, the Galaxy MGT GeForce GTX 570 or the AMD FirePro V7900 professional graphics card? Or do I wait and not upgrade anything, save money, and build a whole new computer rig all at once?" Oh, he also wants to know how easy it is to change the current OS setup from 32-bit OS to 64-bit OS, since I believe the CPU is capable of doing it and I am not able to take advantage of the full 4 gigs of RAM I have currently. Is it worth doing? Yes. And just back off your data, install the operating system fresh. That's what I would do. It's always good to, at least once every 6 months, to reinstall Windows for this year, unbridled joy of it, and to prevent bit rot. You know, here's the problem, is we don't really know what you're doing, Curtis, and what your current CPU is. So
there's a little more information in an email, but it was really long, okay, so I didn't include it all. He has an AMD Phenom 9500 system, so it's a little bit aged on the processor side for sure.
Mm-hmm.
What is more, I guess, questionable to me is that he doesn't mention what he's using it for, like you said.
Right.
And the fact that he has upgraded his current graphics card is an NVIDIA Quadro NVS 450. Which is a little bit of a lower end, kind of older Quadro card.
Right.
And I'm assuming that he is doing professional level things. Otherwise, it's not a real purpose to have a Quadro level card or even an AMD FirePro level card.
Right.
Because what you're paying for there is software support and sometimes a little bit different, not necessarily better, but different connectivity options. And the two options he gives us in this email, the FirePro, the FirePro V7900 versus the Galaxy MDT GeForce GTX 570. The MDT 570 from Galaxy is a card I reviewed recently. Mm-hmm. It supports four displays on a single card, up to 1080p resolution on three of them, and up to 30-inch 2560 by 1600 resolution on one of them. Now, the V7900 will support 2560 by 1600 on all of its connections. So I think there are four on that one as well. So if he's, you know, if he's looking to run four displays at 1080p, the MDT card from Galaxy will be way more cost efficient.
Mm-hmm.
But if he has specific, if he's doing a lot of CAD work, and there are definitely driver advantages on the AMD FirePro and the NVIDIA Quadro side for those types of applications, then he needs to be aware of that. He needs to know that the Quadro driver NVIDIA is different than the GeForce driver from NVIDIA, and you will have to on that MDT. But if it's one of those things where you bought into the Quadro because you wanted three or four displays on a single card, and this was several years ago before it was kind of a well-known mainstream-ish type feature, then yeah, you can get an MDT 570, you can get an AMD 6000 or 7000 series card that has four display outputs and be able to do that fairly inexpensively, especially inexpensive compared to what a FirePro V7900 is going to cost you. Just a real quick look here on Newegg, the V7900 is going to cost you $700. So mm-hmm. for half that, actually less, way less than half that, you can get the same four display outputs. And actually, it won't even all be DisplayPort. But,
right.
you know, it depends on if you need higher than 1080p support per display, that type of thing. So, you know, keep an eye out. Unless you have a specific need for a Quadro or FirePro card, it almost always makes sense to go with a consumer-level card. Same thing with, like, processors.
Right.
Xeon versus Core i7 type of stuff. Unless you have a very specific need for a Xeon processor, like you're going to do... You can get away with building a workstation off of a Core i7 3960 or 990X. That's what all of our systems are here that we use for video production and streaming production and that kind of stuff. They're all consumer-based hardware because it's pretty much the same thing and it's way cheaper.
So. And we're cheap by nature,
yeah.
except when yeah. we're not. And yeah, I'll also add, you know, if you don't need to upgrade your graphics now, if you're, you know, comfortable with the gaming performance or the Photoshop performance or whatever performance you're looking for out of the card, feel free to wait and get more for your money later. Don't take that personally, AMD and NVIDIA. We want you guys to be profitable, but sure. we want people to be happy. Austin's got a question about 120 hertz displays. He says, for the past couple of days, I've been trying to figure out what monitor to get, and I can really use some input from you guys and the viewers. I'd like to get a nice one for gaming. Somewhere between 24 and 27 inches, but I'm not sure if I should go with one with 120 hertz for smoother 2D gaming. I don't care about the 3D. It gives me a headache. Or should I go with a 24 or 27 inch screen with a higher resolution than the standard 1080p? I'm going to be playing a lot of different games, Battlefield 3, Guild Wars 2, whenever that gets released, Saints Row, Skyrim, price is flexible. I was thinking under $900. I have a good system, i7-920, 26950 GPUs in Crossfire, and 6 gigs of RAM. Man,
is he saying under $900 for a monitor?
Yeah, well, the thing is what I think what he's saying, if you're looking at 24-inch monitors are basically 24-inch monitors. Most of them are 1080p. Some of them are at the slightly higher resolution. You know, the extra 120 vertical pixels, which I could really care less about. 27 inches, you start looking at the 2560 by... I can't remember the vertical 14. Resolution. Yeah. Which, you know, on one hand, you know, you're going to get great gaming performance out of a 24-inch 1080p monitor. And they're cheap. They're like $200. You can really push it and spend $400 on one if you want to get one of the higher quality monitors. 27-inch, yeah, then $900. You're looking at a really nice 27-inch Dell monitor or some of the other brands out there, Samsung, at the higher resolution. You've got, man, 6950 GPUs. Those would support the WXQGA, the... resolution chart. I can never remember the 2560 by 1440 resolution.
Yeah, I mean, any modern graphics card would be able to run that. So he's asking about the 120 hertz. He said he doesn't want 3D, but for 2D.
Well, it's kind of funny. Sorry, go ahead. I was going to say
you can't go above 1080p 120 right. hertz LCDs. So that's
right.
if you were asking me, should I get a 27-inch 1080p screen that's 120 hertz? Or should right. I get a 27-inch 2560 by 1440 screen? I will tell you to get that 2560 by 1440 screen every right. time.
Yeah, because I started to realize
the extra pixels more than the 3D stuff.
The thing I started thinking was like, oh, wait, 120 hertz. You know, is he thinking about doing a 27-inch HD TV instead of a 27-inch monitor?
I hope not. I mean, yeah. Because the 120 hertz thing on TVs is different than it is okay. on monitors. The ones that actually support 120 hertz input. That's what you're looking for. It's 120 right. hertz input, not necessarily 120 hertz refresh rate. And in those 120 hertz displays, the 3D vision ready, 3D vision capable right. displays definitely look smoother because they can right. display frame rates over 60 frames per second and still have VSync enabled and that type of stuff. And it is better. It's definitely better. But you're looking at like, so Samsung has a 27-inch display that's 1080p and it's $499. And then right. the Asus one is also 1080p and it's $699. And I was just getting ready to look here at the 2560 by 1600, or I'm sorry, by 1440, right? For the 27 inch. Well,
if you look at, 16 if you're at the Dell outlet, like a WQHD, which is a 2560 by 1440, refurbished is $759 and new, I think, is just under $900. And that's for the I want to say it's one of the ultra sharp 27 inches, you know, compared to a 24 inch 1080p ultra sharp monitor, which is $300. So that's a big delta. That's refurbished prices. So you're still looking at, almost 2.5 times as much to get a 27 inch 2560 by 1440 monitor, which is the monitor I would want if there weren't other toys and a house in line for the money first.
It's so the 2560 by 1440 is gonna be more expensive. He does give us a budget of $900, mm-hmm. and I don't like to leave budget wasted. And I'm looking at Newegg, and there is one display that's 2560 by 1440 under $900 new. You can always go with that refurbished model from Dell, and I have lots of refurbished monitors from Dell, and I like them just fine.
We both do.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, it's tough. I wish these 27 inch higher than 1080p resolution monitors had come down in price more, because I want to see the proliferation of that. I want to see 30-inch displays, 27-inch displays that aren't running at 1080p. Because you think about the pixel density of a 1080p display. The same mm-hmm. resolution runs on 22-inch monitors as is going to run on a 27-inch monitor. It's not going to look as good in terms of a DPI to your eye. If you don't have them side by side, it probably won't matter. But the fact that you can get that 120 hertz for like kind of close to half the price, 60% of the price, Maybe it's worth saving your money and going with a 1080p smoother display, we'll say, versus the higher resolution, more expensive option. It's tough. I have come to love my 30-inch displays. We have a lot of them, and we also have a lot of 3D displays here. And if I'm playing a game, I will almost always choose to play it on the larger 30-inch screen in 2D. So
right.
Yep.
Want to talk about Jonathan's email?
Yeah, the email from Jonathan about Ivy Bridge, real quick. He says, I'm looking to build a gaming rig in the next 2 months. Should I get the recently released 3820, which is the Sandy Bridge E part we talked about a couple weeks ago, or wait for Ivy Bridge and get a CPU for around $300, and which will have a better upgrade path? My total system cost is between $1,000 and $1,600. Thanks. Love the show. Interesting debate, actually. The 3820 is a just under $300 processor. We just talked about X79 motherboards being in the $225 range for kind of your lowest cost option. The benefit is the lowest cost X79 motherboard is going to have way more features than the lowest cost Z68 motherboard, which will support right. Ivy Bridge and Sandy Bridge and that kind of stuff. So a couple things about Ivy Bridge and Sandy Bridge E. Ivy Bridge is not really going to offer any significant processor performance improvements. It will have significant integrated graphics performance improvements, but not on the CPU side of things. So if he's looking to build a machine with discrete graphics for a gaming rig, you're not going to use the integrated graphics anyway. So I would say I kind of lean more towards Sandy Bridge E and X79. Also, because it's available today and you don't have to wait for that. I think a lot of people are going to be disappointed. They're going to be confused when Ivy Bridge numbers come out and it's not right. really that much faster than Sandy Bridge or Sandy Bridge E in these processor-centric tests and especially mm-hmm. in gaming tests. It will be much faster when we look at integrated graphics compared to Sandy Bridge, but not in discrete graphics and based in gaming. As far as better upgrade path, that's the part where I waffle back and forth because I don't think either of them has a really great upgrade path, you know, out more than a year or two.
Right.
Because with Haswell coming down the line from Intel, that will be another big processor adjustment, and that will be a new socket, and that will be a whole lot of other stuff. And that's going to be the next processor where maybe you'll see architectural CPU performance improvements. but not with not really with Ivy Bridge. That being said, I would never recommend anybody wait for Haswell, because that could come out in early 2013, or it could come out in late 2013. It'll land anywhere.
It'll arrive when it arrives.
Yes, and I also don't think, you know, you look at X58 and the Core i7-920 and that processor, it did not have a very good upgrade path. There were not a lot of processors that were offered on that socket. But still, I think the people that have that platform loved that platform. And there are still a lot of people running systems based on that. They're still perfectly fine gaming rigs. I think you still have one up and running, right? That's like your primary computer, Patrick?
Yes.
Other than your laptop? Yes,
well, I've got this, and I've also got a Core i5 system that I built as sort of a super server / rendering box, but I'm not entirely sure where that's going to end up with. But yeah, I'm pretty happy with this processor.
I think with your $1,600, your $1,000 to $1,600 budget, you could buy a 3820 when those come out in a couple of weeks, and an X79 motherboard, get that combination for right around $500. And then go from there. And I do not think you're going to be disappointed when Ivy Bridge comes out. I don't think you're going to wish you had waited in that regard. So there you go.
Have fun. One more question before we go.
Sure.
Glenn has a question about a used Alienware notebook. He says, "Hey guys, I love the show. To be honest, I'm about 3 weeks behind, but I'm an avid listener and watcher. It's okay. It's okay to be behind. Catch up." Glenn's come across an issue and figured he would ask. "I have a friend of mine who's willing to sell me an Alienware M11X R2 first generation i7 500GB HD 4GB of RAM 11-inch for $400. Dude, if you don't buy that, I will. if that's the notebook, I think it is. It's roughly a year old. I thought this was a great deal for a little gaming, Batman, Arkham Asylum, City Crisis, name a few. I like the ultra portability, but more so the price, but most of all the Optimus technology. If you're not familiar with Optimus technology, essentially it allows you to use the discrete graphics for gaming, the built-in graphics for when you want to save battery life. And it's a pretty fantastic chunk of tech in there. Another friend got me looking at a second gen Core i5s. The speeds are incredibly faster, and I read numerous posts about how second gens are way better than the first. I didn't want to go over the $400, $500 price range, so the Alienware was a good deal. What do you guys think? Alienware or troll the web for another replacement in the same price range? You can reply via email, as I am behind watching the show and I have to make a decision fairly quickly." Yeah, we're not very good about that.
Sorry about that.
I want to get my money's worth. And again, thanks for the advice and show. First of all, Glenn, you're welcome. Second of all, we'll try to send you an email, but don't hold your breath too hard.
I hope you're listening.
Yeah, if you desperately want it for gaming, man, save your money, buy the new one. If you want a light gaming and a fantastic, well put together notebook that has pretty good battery life and phenomenal graphics for the platform size, I would go ahead and get it. I would pay in a heartbeat $400 for an M11X, but also I'm not going to be irritated by gaming by not having the most fantastic gaming performance.
I'm looking at the specs for it. It's got a ultra low voltage 1.2 gigahertz Core i7 first gen, not Sandy Bridge. 11.6-inch screen, 1366x768. It's got an NVIDIA GeForce GT3 335M discrete graphics. So it's not, it's going to be good. It's especially going to be able to run at that 1366x768 resolution, which is what it was meant to do. It was originally priced at $1,299. So, and that was in the middle of 2010. So you're looking at an 18-month-old machine, but they're nice looking, well put together rigs. Yeah, so you can see he's got one there. I mean, it's kind of interesting to see. It was interesting when these were first released, the 11-inch gaming laptop. The whole idea of it at the time was kind of weird, but it seems to be a more popular idea now than it used to be.
I think it's a fantastic platform. If you really, because all too often people are like, "Oh, I'm going to get a 17-inch gaming notebook," and then you end up with a notebook that's too big to carry, often has horrendous battery life, and yet manages to still feel incredibly small compared to a 21-inch or 24-inch desktop monitor. With this, you go for portability and usability and battery life. And yeah, you've got a small screen, but the truth is most of the modern games you're playing on it are so utterly enveloping. You're not really, you know what I mean? I don't find the small screen to be particularly frustrating. I don't know. My rule of thumb is if you get 3 years out of a gaming laptop, you're doing great. So in sense, you've got another, you know, you probably got another at least year before you start thinking to myself, oh my goodness, all the games I want to play won't play on this, at least not without throttling down the settings. You know, if budget's a concern, I'd go for it because that's a fantastic deal for that notebook as far as I'm concerned, as long as it's not trashed. You know,
it's a buddy you trust.
Yeah. I'd go for it. You know, unless you want to play freaking Crysis on a 30-inch WQHD monitor, in which case then you may want to save up and look at the second gens. But yeah, I like that notebook. Roger, my partner in crime on Techzilla, our series producer, I think I actually saw tears when he sent back our review unit of the M11X. And Roger does not get romantic about hardware, but he really liked that notebook. James has a problem with our show. He says, the problem with your show is that for 2 to 3 hours after listening to it, I have to convince myself that I do not need to build a new system at this exact moment, no matter how much fun that may be. So I set a goal of replacing my 3-year-old system near the end of 2012, if I can find a good sweet spot. Till then, I will be using your show to help me find it. Thanks for everything. Well, should we tell them about the special pages at PCPer.com?
Yeah, definitely don't go to the hardware leaderboard where it tells you all about the parts you can buy and it's updated continuously. That's PCPer.com/leaderboard.
You don't want to go there. No. James, yeah. I think wait until the end of the year is a really good time. You know, we did see a flurry of GPU announcements in December, kind of pre-CES, or what felt like a flurry of announcements. But the reality is for most of the major vendors, they're product lineups are pretty well set in stone by sort of September, October-ish, at the very latest, the beginning of November, because they want the Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, you know, they want the holiday shopping dollars. And to do that, they need to have their product in the channel before Black Friday. So I would say end of 2012 is a fantastic time to be looking at upgrading your machine. I think we're going to see the prices on the new CPU settling down. I think the GPU prices should be pretty stable. Hopefully, hard drives will have sort of stabilized a little bit as Western Digital gets back online in Thailand. That sounds like a good goal, and that also gives you almost all of 2012 to save your pennies, so you have a good budget, and then go to the leaderboard, and man, start buying, and start moving that economy forward. So,
I tend to be a little bit less cautious. Patrick, I think when Ivy Bridge is released, whenever that app actually is, April timeframe, I think you'll see all the GPUs out and all the CPUs that are going to be out for the rest of the year. And after that, start thinking about it. Start looking at budgets. I'm thinking this guy's PC should be a summer build.
You know what? Summer, winter. We're always, you know, unless you're looking super budget and just do us a favor. Don't buy a part this week and a part next month and a part the month after that, because then by the time you get all your parts together, you're going to be looking at those first few parts and realizing how much less money you could have spent for them, which is always incredibly frustrating.
Yep.
So what's coming up on PC Pert, man?
So we have GPU reviews coming up, not just of the super secret kind, but we have we posted a review of the Gigabyte GTX 580 Super Overclock card this week. We're kind of getting towards, on the NVIDIA side, wrapping up all of their generation of architecture. And at the end of those generations, you see a lot of the best cards, like custom design, super overclocked, where we've got one testing that has a white, pure white PCB that just looks really cool. From Galaxy that we're going to have a review up soon. So we got that, plus X79 boards that we talked about just a little bit ago. We'll have some reviews up of those for people who are interested in that whole Sandy Bridge versus Ivy Bridge debate down the line. So that is what's coming up on PC Per. What do you guys have coming up on this week's Techzilla shows?
We're going to be talking about OBD2 code. So if there's a, basically, if you've got a car that was built in 1996 or later, there's a little chunk of plastic, a port below the steering wheel underneath the dashboard that allows you to read the codes, the infamous check engine light, and to check other information. Basically, in the case of the device I use, actually allows me to monitor the functions of the engine in real time and help diagnose problems or look for performance opportunities. So we're going to be talking about OBD2 scanners, DJing on a notebook, and then talking about Seagate's Momentus XT and what's going on with that and MacBook Pros, since there was some trouble with that earlier this year. That situation has changed. And later on in the week, I'm going to be creating a 500 gigabyte tablet. I should say a 500 gigabyte iPad, to be more accurate.
All right. Look forward to see that.
There is a hack there.
I kind of guessed that. Yeah.
A hack involving Seagate. So that's what's coming up on Techzilla.com. We're still kind of reeling from the whole CES thing. We actually ended up HD Nation. Well, it was funny. Like we realized that five of the videos that Robert Heron shot with some of our HDTV coverage didn't actually get posted. So they're up on the HD Nation feed now. If you're looking for what's going on with Samsung and Sharp and JVC and Vizio, and if you're thinking about buying a new HDTV, I highly recommend the HD Nation feed. So, oh my goodness. Good. I really do not want to build a new computer, but now I'm thinking about it.
Hey, now you're just like everybody else that watches the show, Patrick. I'll get everybody. I'll convince you all.
You know what? You're not going to convince me. I'm just going to upgrade the GPU on this machine right here. Because actually, wait, put the camera on Ryan, because his face is going to be really funny when he realizes my GPU that I'm running on this. Don't you love that moment when you go to open up the device manager and you end up someplace completely different? Let me open up the Catalyst Control Center. And where is it?
It's actually still called that. That's actually pretty good.
Okay. Advanced display settings.
Device manager would work too. Are we talking a 2000 series card?
No, man. It's even worse than that. Yeah, it's a Radeon HD 5700.
Oh, okay. 57. Okay, that's all right. You okay? That's not as bad as I thought. Okay, you had me really scared there when I said 2000 series, because that's, you got 2000, 3000, 4000, 5000. So you're only two complete architectural jumps backwards. Now would be a good time to look at those 6000 series, or look at the. Hopefully, we'll see the Fermi parts go on sale too from NVIDIA. As AMD puts a little more pressure on them with these products coming out the line too, so I think you'll have some good options in the next month or so.
Wonder if I can make it to Central Computers before they close tonight. And of course, their website won't even open.
We'll end the show then, so you have that opportunity. What do you say?
That's it for Twitch this week in computer hardware. Do us a favor, send us your hardware email questions, or if you got a, you know, if you're curious about what we think about something that's going on in the news, we'd love to hear about it. Twitch@twit.tv, or hit us on Twitter @RyanShrout or @PatrickNorton. PCPer.com is where you can find Ryan Shrout on the rest of the week. Techzilla.com, TEKZILLA, is where you can find me. And that is it for this edition of Twitch. I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Ryan Shrout.
We'll see you next week on Twitch.